This week on Vaticano, listen to the Holy Father's call for unity among Christians. Find out more about the Eucharistic revival taking place in the United States and around the world, and continue exploring the Papal Basilica of St. Mary Major. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. Each year for the Feast of St. Anthony the Abbot on January the 17th, the square outside St. Peter's Basilica is transformed into a farm. For over a decade, livestock farmers from the AIA, the Italian Breeders Association, have brought their animals, cows, rabbits, sheep, chickens, and horses, to the square to receive a special blessing for animals. While many may associate the Feast of St. Francis of Assisi with the blessing of animals, Italian farmers and pet owners traditionally celebrate the Feast of St. Anthony Abbot, the patron saint of both animals and farmers. While the Desert Father is generally considered to be the founder of Christian monasticism, St. Anthony the Great eventually also became the patron saint of animals, as it was reported that several animals played an important role in his life. For example, a pig supposedly kept him attuned to the hours of the day for his prayers, explaining why the hermit saint is most frequently represented as accompanied by a pig. Before the blessing of the animals on Pope Pius XII Square, Holy Mass was celebrated in St. Peter's Basilica by His Eminence Cardinal Mauro Gambetti, Archpriest of the Papal Basilica of St. Peter's in the Vatican, Vicar General of His Holiness for the Vatican City, and President of the Fabric of St. Peter. During the Mass, farmers brought up different farm products for the offertory. At the end of Mass, Cardinal Gambetti, together with civil and military authorities, visited the open-air exhibition of animals and imparted a blessing on all of the animals, farmers, and families gathered in Pope Pius XII Square. The open-air exhibition of animals, named Stalla Sotto il Cielo, Italian for stable under the sky, was open to the public from about 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. People were also invited to bring their pet animals, not only to receive the special blessing, but also to take advantage of the free checkups offered by veterinarians. It is time to heal the relationships among the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Churches, urged Pope Francis, addressing the students of the Committee for Cultural Collaboration with the Orthodox Churches and Oriental Orthodox Churches, which is celebrating its 60th anniversary. He underscored the significance of its academic programs, essential for building dialogue and friendship among Catholic and Orthodox students.
Vital and direct contact with concrete communities in which all share the same desire to follow the one Master, the Lord Jesus Christ, and to serve His Church, helps not only the Orthodox and Oriental Orthodox students, but the Catholic ones as well, to overcome prejudices, to break down walls, and to build bridges of dialogue and friendship.
The Holy Father said that while studying here in Rome, they have a great opportunity to share with one another who Christ is for them and how He won their hearts. And this collective sharing of experiences is envisioned as a powerful foundation for transcending stereotypes, overcoming divisions, and addressing the sins of the past. Pope Francis welcomed the group in the days leading up to the celebration of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity, and expressed gratitude to the head of the Dicastery for the Promotion of Christian Unity, Cardinal Kurt Koch, and the rectors of the ecclesiastical colleges hosting scholarship students.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. The Vatican announced that the canopy over the main altar of St. Peter's Basilica will undergo a major restoration. The project, expected to be completed just before the start of the Catholic Church's Jubilee year in December, will require scaffolding to be set up around the canopy of the Basilica's main altar for nearly a year. The restoration will cost more than $750,000, which the Knights of Columbus will fund, and it will be carried out by the Vatican Museum's expert art restorers. The regime of Nicaraguan dictator Daniel Ortega released and sent to the Vatican two imprisoned Nicaraguan bishops along with 15 priests and seminarians. Among those released was Bishop Rolando Alvarez of Matagalpa and Bishop Isidoro Mora of Ciuna. According to Vatican News, the released clerics arrived in Rome and were welcomed as guests of the Holy See. Vatican City has new tenants, seven nuns from Argentina who, at the request of Pope Francis, will live in Mater Ecclesia, the monastery where Pope Benedict XVI resided for almost a decade following his resignation from the papacy. The group consists of six Benedictine nuns and their abbess who were previously living in the town of Victoria, located in Buenos Aires province. Cardinal Pier Battista Piazzaballa, Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, met with Pope Francis to discuss the situation in the Middle East. According to the Cardinal, they spoke about the state of the dialogue in the region and the prospects for peace. "We have to think in stages," the Cardinal told journalists afterwards and added sadly, "there will be no immediate solution." In February, Pope Francis will canonize Argentina's first female saint. He'll preside over the canonization mass for Blessed Maria Antonia of St. Joseph on February the 11th in St. Peter's Basilica. Maria Antonia was proclaimed venerable by Pope Benedict XVI in 2010 and was later beatified by Pope Francis in 2016. Thank you so much for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano.
Jesus Cristo, verdadeiro Deus e verdadeiro homem. Bendito o nome de Jesus. Bendito o seu sacratíssimo coração. Bendito o seu preciosíssimo sangue.
Eu quisiera aqui fazer uma pergunta, pero cada um se la responde a dentro.
I would like to ask a question, which everyone can respond in his or her heart.
Como rezo yo?
How do I pray?
Como un loro, bla 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 bla.
As a blah blah blah, half asleep before the tabernacle, because I don't know how to talk to the Lord.
Porque no sé cómo hablar con el Señor. Rezo.
Do I pray?
¿Cómo rezo?
How do I pray? Only in adoration, only in the presence of the Lord, do we truly rediscover our taste and passion for evangelization.
Y la pasión por la evangelización.
During World Youth Day in Lisbon, Pope Francis emphasized the significance of adoration and raised a fundamental question: how do we pray? In Rome, we asked pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square whether they believe in the real presence of Jesus Christ in the Eucharist when they're praying.
As a Catholic, as an Italian, I really believe in the presence of Eucharist, of Jesus in the Eucharist, and I think that is really renewal and refreshing every Sunday at least to get the Eucharist, and I think that people should do that with a purification of their souls when they can.
Talking with pilgrims, we received different answers and reached out to Father Michael Baggett, who organizes weekly Eucharistic adoration for young people in Rome. We aim to understand why young people find it valuable to participate in Eucharistic adoration prayer.
Well, in a world in which so many of our relationships are mediated through technology, I think one of the great antidotes to the disconnection we experience is Eucharistic adoration, because we place ourselves in the presence of the Lord.
Almost two-thirds of Catholics in the United States do not believe in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, according to a recent Pew Research Center study. To properly catechize the faithful, the United States Bishops' Conference organized the National Eucharistic Revival, And Father Michael, an American priest in Rome, is taking part in the initiative.
I think that this troubling statistic about the low number of Catholics who attend Mass and yet fail to believe in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist is an invitation and a challenge to all of us to catechize better, to instruct better through our teaching in schools or in other settings, but also to instruct well through the way in which we celebrate the liturgy. A beautifully, reverently celebrated liturgy is one of the greatest forms of sharing with every generation the beauty of the Eucharist, the presence of Christ. If a priest and those around him are acting as though they're in the presence of God, then everyone else will begin to realize the great mystery and marvel that's before us.
In 6 months, as many as 80,000 Catholics are expected to attend the event from July the 17th to the 21st, 2024, in Indianapolis for the National Eucharistic Congress in the United States. Later this year, a worldwide gathering will be taking place in Quito, Ecuador.
I think is one of the great values of Eucharistic adoration in our age is we have quality time to listen to the Lord and make ourselves more present to His real and full presence to us.
The Congress in the United States is the climax of the Bishop's 3-year National Eucharistic Revival Initiative, which was launched in part because of the Pew Research poll. The recent Pew Research Center study revealed that 69% of Catholics in the United States believe that the bread and wine used in Mass are, quote, symbols of the body and blood of Jesus Christ. The problem is that this is not what the Catholic Church teaches about the Eucharist, and it conflicts with 2,000 years of Catholic tradition and teaching. The Church teaches that the Eucharist is the source and summit of the Christian life. And as Pope Francis has often said, the Eucharistic celebration is an encounter with the risen Jesus.
Jesus Christ, in his last days of earthly ministry, gathers his beloved apostles together, and he gives them an amazing gift. He says to them during the meal, "This is my body, this is my blood." This is his farewell gift to us, not just a nice gesture or a way of remembering someone who is lost to us, but a continuation of his presence. He wants to remain with us. He says, "I will be with you until the end of the world."
The prayer for Christian unity, all people, lay people, priests, bishops have the duty to pray for Christian unity and to have a better knowledge from one another.
For the feast of the conversion of St. Paul, over a century ago, the Church established an important tradition, the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity. This year, the motto of the week is taken from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 10. You shall love the Lord your God and your neighbor as yourself. EWTN Vatican Bureau Chief Andreas Stonehauser sat down with Cardinal Kurt Koch, who oversees the Church's efforts regarding unity with other churches.
Could you maybe tell us a little bit what will be the message of this week, of this prayer, and what are your personal hopes for this?
The beginning of the ecumenical movement is the introduction of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity. And it means the most important thing for Christian unity is prayer. The fundament of this issue we see in the high priestly prayer of Jesus in the 17th chapter by John. And for me is always very impressive that Jesus does not command the unity between his disciples, but he prays for unity.
Is this also difficult sometimes to pray together when you don't have the same theological basis?
I think the prayer is a good way to have a better knowledge from one another, because the prayer is a very inner mode. To be Christian, to be Protestant, to be Orthodox, to be Catholic. And when we see how the other is in prayer, we have a better knowledge from one another.
Where would you see, or how would you describe the situation of Christian churches and their journey towards unity?
It's very different. In our dicastery, we have two sections, the section East and the section West. In the section East, we have the dialogue with all the Oriental Orthodox churches and the Orthodox churches. Here we have a very big basis of human common faith. And I think the most important question is, what is church? What is unity in the church? And what can be the role of the Bishop of Rome in the future unity? In the section West, we have many different dialogues with all the churches and ecclesial communities. They come from the Reformation, with the Lutheran, Reformed, Baptist, Mennonite, Methodists. Here, I think we must have a deeper discussion, what is church and what is the unity of the church.
And where will this discussion go? Are there any ecumenical events also planned for the Jubilee? Are there any hopes also to have this Jubilee year as a basis or a platform for conversations?
This is the holy year for the Catholic Church, and it's clear that the holy year has always the issue and the theme of conversion. And I think we must also have a conversion to unity. And during 2025, we have also this commemoration of the Council, First Council of Nicaea. This council has happened in a time when the church was not wounded by so many divisions and splits in the history. And I think all Christian churches and ecclesial communities can commemorate together this first ecumenical council and to confess the Christological faith that Christ is the Son of God in union with the Father, and to deepen this Christological question, confession, together is for me a very beautiful challenge.
What can individual faithful do across the world to help with this challenge? What can I do to help with Christian unity?
The prayer for Christian unity, all people, lay people, priests, bishops have the duty to pray for Christian unity and to have a better knowledge from one another. And this means that we must have some meetings with one another. We distinguish in the ecumenical dialogue between ecumenism of love and ecumenism of truth. Ecumenism of truth means the theological dialogue about the questions that have divided the church. And ecumenism of love is relation in friendship, fraternal relations. And this is the main lightword this year: you shall love the Lord, your God, and you shall love the neighbor as yourself, from the Gospel of Luke.
They will recognize them by their love. Your Eminence, thank you so much for your time, and we will join you in the prayer for Christian unity.
United in prayer during this week.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Stay with us after the break to discover the treasures of the Basilica of St. Mary Major and witness the August snowfall of rose petals, commemorating a miracle designed by Our Lady. The beating heart of the Basilica of St. Mary Major is the altar that enshrines some of the most precious relics of Christendom. The complex is crowned by a baldachin, and a chapel underneath provides access to venerate the relics of the Nativity that arrived from Bethlehem in the 7th century. Guido Sante continues to guide us through the time, art, and spirituality of the Papal Basilica of St. Mary Major.
Nell'Ottocento, invece, il secolo scorso,
in the 19th century, about 150 years ago, Pope Pius IX, who reigned for many years, decided to construct a confession. Essentially, this involved opening up an area in the floor with two large staircases leading beneath the main altar to preserve the holy cradle.
E lì conservare la sacra culla. I pellegrini, i visitatori, i fedeli.
Pilgrims, visitors, and believers can thus descend these stairs every day, enter the heart of the basilica beneath the main altar, and there pray in front of the relic of the Holy Cradle. This relic consists of five planks of sycamore wood, an oriental tree, housed in a large reliquary made of crystal, silver, and gold, crafted by Giuseppe Valadier in 1802. At the center of the confession is the statue of Pius IX, a large statue depicting him kneeling, looking towards the relic and facing the altar.
Guardando verso la reliquia e guardando verso l'altare. L'altare che è una preziosa.
The altar, a precious basin made of imperial red marble and porphyry, houses other significant relics preserved at Santa Maria Maggiore. For example, the relics of St. Jerome, the relics of the Apostle Matthew, and a series of other relics. There is, therefore, a very precise connection between the relic of the Holy Cradle, the relics of the Nativity, the doctors and the saints, and the main altar. Overarching all of this is a huge, beautiful baldachin, executed and designed by architect Ferdinando Fuga in 1750 for the Jubilee of 1750. Commissioned by Pope Benedict XIV. It echoes the concept of Bernini's baldachin at St. Peter's, but is no longer Baroque. Instead, it embodies the style of the 18th century, reflecting a taste for ancient art. The columns are once again made of porphyry and imperial marble, and all the decorations are in gilded bronze, reminiscent of St. Peter's baldachin, but with a completely different style.
A ricordare sì il baldacchino di San Pietro, ma con uno stile completamente diverso.
Every year on August the 5th, the Basilica commemorates its foundation with a snowfall of white rose petals, recalling the miracle of the snowfall that Pope Liberius discovered on the hill where the Basilica is constructed. According to tradition, Mary appeared to him in a dream and instructed him to establish a church dedicated to her, promising that he would find snow the next day.
Era agosto, quindi doveva essere molto caldo, ma il miracolo fece che.
It was August, so it should have been very hot, but the miracle caused it to snow here. Every year this snowfall is remembered. In the center of the ceiling, right above the confession of Pius IX, on August the 5th each year, a hatch opens. During the solemn mass commemorating the foundation of the basilica, white rose petals and white flowers rain down, precisely to recall the snowfall that founded the basilica by the will of Mary.
Fondò la basilica per volontà di Maria.
St. Mary Major houses several chapels, including the Crucifix Chapel by Ferdinando Fuga. Notable among them are the Chazy Chapel, dedicated to St. Catherine of Alexandria. However, the most beautiful and important chapels are the Pauline Chapel, which houses the icon Salus Populi Romani, and the Basilica's Sistine Chapel. In the next episode, we'll delve into the treasures of the Sistine Chapel of Santa Maria Maggiore.